This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly, a week of Premier League clubs annoyed about FA Cup replays stopping them going to Dubai over the winter break. The biggest upset at Ashton Gate, where Bristol City beat West Ham. Is the Hammers' season in danger of derailing after a couple of significant injuries? Wonderful to see the man who scored the winning penalty at the World Cup final being absolutely Baltic in Blackpool, but Montiel and friends did just enough to win for Forest. Plus, we'll touch on wins for Wolves, Everton and Luton, amongst others. Then there's a Premier League preview. Arsenal need to get back on the horse at home to Palace. Ivan Toney returns to Brentford, but for how long? Also today, we'll speak to a Reading fan about on-pitch protests against their owners. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. James says, with no disrespect intended to any other pod contributors, is this the friendliest lineup possible? Get Archie on the sofa, a full house of the nicest people in football. Is it too friendly? Are they too nice? Is this like Gareth Southgate? Ben Fisher, welcome.
Thanks, Max. Yeah, I'll try and unleash my mean streak. Let's see how it goes.
Oh, I should hope so. Robin Cowan, hello.
Morning, Max. Yeah, I think we'd get beaten pretty easily, wouldn't we?
You think we'd lay down, we'd wilt.
Roy Keane would be talking about they need someone, a midfield general, that's a bit more edge than us, probably.
Wow. Arise, Sir Troy Townsend, senior MBE. You've got a bit of spice about me, Troy. You get stuck in.
Yeah, but not at this time in the morning. That's the only problem. So I normally do it late afternoon.
Do you know what? I like having a nice time. I mean, so let's all be friends. That's great. Let's start at Ashton Gate. Bristol City 1, West Ham 0. Ben. It's Brian Tinian again. What a moment for you.
Yeah, no, it was great. Great night. And it does feel like, I mean, Liam Manning, the head coach manager, said afterwards that, you know, it was the kind of night that just shows you what could happen here, what the sort of club is capable of. He said about the energy, the atmosphere. And it did feel a bit like that. I mean, a few years ago, 2017, had that amazing run in the Carabao Cup, beat Man United, Jose Mourinho's Manchester United, got to the semis, played Man City over two legs. And kind of felt a little bit kind of deja vu, really, in terms of, you know, an upset at home against one of the bigger teams. David Moyes seemed kind of reluctant to call it an upset, given, you know, City are in the Championship. They're not sort of some League Two no-hopers. But, a really good night. And a great story, really, because the goal very early on was sort of made in Bristol. Max O'Leary, the goalkeeper, come through the academy.
Pam Ayres passed it to... I'm trying to think of someone else famous from Bristol. Martin Parr, and now I'm out. The guy who did the little animated Nick Park. He, you know, yeah.
Yes, he laid animations. It off. Yeah. Very close to me, actually. And Max O'Leary's clearance ended up at Tommy Conway because Mavropanos made a, you know, horrendous mistake, short, undercooked a back pass for the goalkeeper, Fabianski. And Tommy Conway, again, who's been with the club since the age of seven, he nipped in and showed a really sort of cool head, great finish. I really like him, actually. I mean, he's still 21, but he's having a really good season again after a bit of a slow start. A great night for the club. I mean, there's a couple of interesting challenges in there, and maybe on another day with the advent of sort of VAR, if that was involved in the game, maybe there could have been a couple more red cards. Obviously, Ben Rama was sent off for a just pure petulant sort of thrust into Joe Williams's nether parts. A really good night for the club. And now they play Forest at home as well in the next round. So another opportunity to create an upset.
I think I heard, Ben, that Bristol is the biggest city in the UK or in England and Wales that's never had a side in the Premier League. Is that correct? Are you ready for it? Is it about to happen?
Well, I mean, it's one of those clubs which not so long ago it seemed that Bristol City were seen as on a par with Brighton, certainly Brentford, really, in terms of, you know, the model and where they're going and the plans for the stadium and all the rest of it. They've obviously renovated Ashton Gate. I think the kind of Premier League club in waiting thing has been thrown around for probably far too many years now. They need to kind of just bridge that gap to get into the playoffs. I think that, you know, obviously the top two is sewn up, but could be them, but then there's probably about 10, 11, 12 clubs in the Championship who fancy themselves as that club this season. So, yeah, but it's really impressive. The training ground's really, really sleek, and what they've done with Ashton Gate, I think, is quite smart. So it does feel like if it was to take off, it would be a great story.
I mean, I spent most of the time worrying that Pam Ayres isn't from Bristol. But anyway, look, we'll worry about that at some other time. For West Ham, Robin, look, you don't want to go out to a lower league side. They've got injuries, Paquetá as well, you know, it's huge. Kudus is away at AFCON. But, you know, they're doing well in Europe. They're doing well in the Premier League. They're probably okay. You know, it's not a disaster.
Yeah, they're sixth in the Premier League. And yet, there always is this kind of cloud over David Moyes saying, is he under pressure? As you say, it's not great to go out to a lower league side. And I feel like he does it quite a lot, David Moyes. I remember doing a game a few years back when he was at West Ham the first time and they lost to Wigan. I'm not sure he cares much about the FA Cup. But as you said, a lot to look forward to. But yeah, he seems to be perennially under pressure. There is a worry, though, as you said, that front three are missing. No Bowen. And Ings, Benrahma, who obviously won't be available now, and Corne, no goals between them this season. Obviously, they haven't played a lot. Yeah. But they didn't look great, did they? Yeah. So that's a slight concern, I'd say.
I suppose that's the interesting thing, Troy, isn't it? If you don't rotate your side ever, and David Moyes doesn't, if you don't rotate your attacking players, then they are going to be rusty, right?
I'm not quite sure he can label rusty against Maxwell Corne. He looked like he just didn't want to be there, full stop. It was a remarkable performance from him. I get what Robin's saying about, you know, they'll be all right, sixth and the European competition. But tell me a fan, particularly of a club that has a little bit of history, that doesn't want to get through to the latter stages of the FA Cup.
It's not very friendly to take on Robin like that.
You wanted a little bit of steel. Yeah, exactly. Let's get it going early doors. So I think them West Ham fans will be massively, massively disappointed again. Whatever lineup, you know, you look at the defence, you look at their midfield, there's enough there to go and take on that game and potentially win it. But I don't want to disrespect Bristol City because, again, it was, you know, the atmosphere, the performance, everything that they did, how they approached the game, the tempo, the shutting down, everything was excellent. You know, the press, everything was excellent. So, you know, credit. It's probably not a time to douse down on West Ham. It's probably a time to laud Bristol City. And I've followed young Tommy Conway's career ever since I did one of my sermons at Bristol City a few years ago. And we are in touch, and it's just lovely to see, you know, a young lad like that who's dedicated his career to trying to play for his, you know, to trying to get up the ladder for his hometown club, score a goal like that in such an important game. And it was a really good goal as well. So, yeah, plaudits to Bristol City and West Ham for David Moyes. You know, he's got the trying to get back in Europe and trying to win Europe. So give him the plaudits there.
Robin, as an Oxford United fan, were you delighted for Liam Manning?
Still hurts, Max. No, I wouldn't say I was delighted. I think I'm getting there to try and be pleased for him, but no. No, it's still, you know, I'm still a woman spurned. So,
no,
yeah,
I understand.
But they'll
be okay one day.
It's so petty, but wanting to see him not do well is, I can't help it. But they deserved it. They really did. But as Ben alluded to there, I mean, some of the tackles. They were up for this, and then obviously we need to mention Benrahma's sending off, don't we? Did Son do a similar thing? That sort of, you're on the floor and you push up with the studs. Yeah. I'm not sure how he thought he was going to get away with that.
Do you think, though, if you've just been fouled, like there should be a sort of 5 second, if you do something stupid in 5 seconds, everyone can just say, unless you like properly
decapitate them.
Because it is sort of annoying, you know, you're annoyed. You've been kicked over, Ben.
Moyes did say, actually, interestingly, Max, maybe on the back of that afterwards, that he felt the referee should have intervene quicker on the back of that initial contact between Williams and Benrahma to prevent any kind of afters from developing. I mean, whether in theory that is actually feasible or possible feels wishful thinking. But credit to Moyes, actually, after, I thought he sort of took defeat on the chin. I think he only really said what he said about, you know, if there was VAR and, you know, maybe some of the challenges were a bit tasty because he was kind of prompted by journalists. I don't think he actually came in sort of looking for that line at all. So yeah, credit to him.
If only Kim Milton Nielsen had dived onto David Beckham before he kicked out, was it Diego Simeone? Could all be so different.
Diego Simeone.
Couldn't it? Anyway.
Taking a bullet like a bodyguard.
Exactly. Exactly. Pam Ayres, born in Stanford in the Vale in Oxfordshire. My apologies. I just couldn't give anyone famous from Bristol. Speaking of Bristol, Bristol Rovers lost 3-1 at home to Norwich. They did take the lead. But James writes, long-term listener, big fan here. Max's reference to Bristol's cup win in yesterday's pod was surely a smart-ass joke intended to wind up us gas heads. It's bad enough that we have to put up with various reds on the panel, and I know we have only just sacked the idiot who shall not be named, but come on, I'm 20 minutes into the episode, I haven't listened to a word, trying to find the email address while Al angrily stood at the station on the way home for the big game tonight. Max should be forced to say 50 Devon Whites as penance. Regards, James Wright. Look, I mean, maybe there is an ushering in of a new agenda for the pod, the anti-Bristol Rovers agenda. I'm so sorry. I didn't even know I did it. If I can throw anyone under the bus, it is tour de force Asasu Obayuana, who, if you listened to yesterday's pod, I was just trying to say something. I was just trying to get a word in. And so I just shouted Bristol at the right time. But those of you who loved Asasu, we will get him back on. But yes, my heartfelt apologies to the Bristol Rovers fans. Also last night, Blackpool almost beat Nottingham Forest, didn't they? Matty says, do you think Blackpool gritted the pitch before the game tonight? Sani, our mate Sani Redravagina, sent a brilliant tweet saying, look, the man who scored the winning penalty in the World Cup final is now freezing his bollocks off in Blackpool as it hits 0 degrees. Must be hard. Must be hard, Troy, if you've won the World Cup. You scored the penalty that wins the World Cup. You know, I know when you cross that white line, everything goes out of your head, but it was freezing there.
It's as freezing there as what it is in here this morning, I tell you. Listen, yeah, you've obviously reached a pinnacle when you've done that. And then you play for Nottingham Forest. So, look, he's had his moment in time. You've got to approach those games in the manner as they are FA Cup finals, World Cup finals, or anything like that. And, you know, that Forest side were put under tremendous amount of pressure. I really enjoyed that second half yesterday. Really enjoyed it. Because Blackpool, listen, it was an all right game first half. I wasn't really invested in it, but I knew that I had to do the pod, so I had to watch it and have it in the background. But the second half was, you know, from once they gave the second goal away through trying to play about round the back, they absolutely pummeled Nottingham Forest. And, you know, 10 minutes stoppage time, which was basically eating into all the extra time they had. I think they were really disappointed that the whistle went at the end of 100 minutes, because like they were so on top and their performance was everything that, you know, that their fans deserved after coming back and playing at Forest. So, no, it was a really good game, really cold atmosphere. I'll let the other guys delve into it a little bit more. You might find that a lot with me today, Max. I mean, I think the FA Cup coverage over the last 2 days has been quite embarrassing considering, you know, you have two live games, but you don't get to watch the other games. I used to think that the FA Cup was held in such high esteem that no matter who you were a fan of, if you were involved in a replay, then, you know, you were able to watch a little bit of your team in that replay.
So just like a match of the day, like a highlights show or something,
yeah,
right?
just something. But it just seems that they're trying to devalue this competition so much now that even the broadcasters don't care. Let's just get two games on, let everybody watch that, and then will show the goal highlights with no commentary, no nothing. And I'm really disappointed with it. And I think, yeah, they're treating the FA Cup with a little bit of disdain for me.
Do you think so? I mean, I sort of feel that they spread it out. So there's like a game, they spread it over like 6 days and there's like a game, almost like...
Well, look, yeah. When you say the initial... So obviously when we've got the games coming up now, but like I said, this is a replay weekend. And I know people are... Sorry, replay midweek. And I know they'll probably say, well, we didn't have enough space for these games and that. But I just think the games have gone to a replay. We know that they don't like replays. And I think they're proving that they don't like replays because they won't show the replays. So I just think a little highlights package would be nice. You know, there's a couple of good games in there. There's a couple of games where maybe there could have been shots. Bristol Rovers. I'm going to mention Bristol Rovers, even if you don't. We're 1-0 up, you know, at Norwich, and there's potential there. There's the Luton game, which obviously we'll cover in a little while. which it was too freezing for me to go, by the way. Wolves-Brentford was a really good game. Eastleigh-Newport, there were some really good games on. And, you know, just to get a little bit of highlights would have been nice.
See what I could do.
I'm just trying to help that listener that says, do you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm trying to be that guy, Max. Yeah.
It's nice to know a father's love will only stretch to a certain degree. Yeah. No, I'll be the same. I'd be the same.
No messing about. There's love.
So sorry for Lucy Ward and Sam Matterface, because you're thinking, right, 90 minutes in the cold, we'll be fine, done and dusted. And then it's just, oh no.
Extra time and another 10 minutes on top of that as well.
Neil Critchley, the Blackpool boss, said, with regards to, he thought that Chris Wood's winner might have been offside. He said, in the first game we had VAR, that would have gone to VAR. You draw lines on the pitch and it might have been offside. How can you have VAR in the first and not the second game, which means we've gone out? The integrity of the competition has to be questioned. It might have gone to penalties and we win, but to not have VAR with the same group of players just playing on a different pitch, I can't see how that can be right. It is always a coincidence, Ben, that the losing manager wants VAR or doesn't want VAR. And when there is VAR and it goes against them, the manager doesn't want VAR. And when there isn't VAR, they do want VAR. And I just sort of think, I wouldn't mind if the FA Cup had no VAR, but like if you can have it and you have it and you don't, it's the same for both teams on the night. I don't see what the problem is.
No, I'm with you really. I think it's a bit of a painful kind of almost sore loser kind of rhetoric that wanting to sort of keep banging on about David Moyes. He did say the other night he felt it should either be in the competition at every game, every ground, or not at all. I do see that logic, but I kind of think, like as you say, on the night, both teams are in the same situation. It's not like, you know, one of the teams has the use of VAR and the other doesn't. No, I don't see it. And again, I mean, it's a bit like Nuno was, you know, he sort of couldn't hide his total sort of disgust at the thought of playing a replay. Obviously, then they had to go the distance, as you say, in kind of interesting conditions in Blackpool. But on the night they're through and, you know, it's sort of job done, and suddenly now you probably won't hear him sort of moaning so much about the replay. Obviously, it's not ideal preparation for Brentford.
Oh, no, he said the FA Cup is so, so special after the game yesterday. So, I mean, that is rowing back quite some distance, I thought.
The old school U-turn. So, I don't know. I think, you know, managers who lose games are narky, right? That's nature of the beast.
Martin Tyler was commentating on this game for the international coverage, I guess. He must love football so much. He doesn't need the mud. What are they chucking him to do that one? I mean, I don't know if he was in a small box, you know, near his house or in his house, or if he was at the game, but, you know, credit to him for that commitment to football. To Molyneux then, Wolves 3, Brentford 2, after extra time, Matias Cunha's slightly soft penalty gave Wolves the first time they took the lead in the entire tie. But as you said, Troy, quite a fun game of football.
Why come to me when I've just said to you, I haven't watched anything?
Wouldn't it be nice if you'd had some highlights of this one? The FA Cup's got a YouTube channel.
I can't believe you've done that to me. Oh. I can't believe you've done that to me.
That's okay.
By the way, I wanted to add a little bit of value on the VAR conversation.
Oh, add some value. Here we go. I'd love you to add some value. Right.
Because I think you and Ben are both wrong. I do agree that how can you... Something that can define a game, and I said this a few years ago, probably on a rival pod, which we won't mention, but how can you have something that can obviously...
I didn't know anyone else hired you, Troy, to be honest.
Oh, listen, I wasn't hired. I begged. Right. I just don't see how you can have it like in the League Cup. You can't have it for one game and not have it for the next, because it's a decision-defining system. And so, like, you just don't bring it into the competition, full stop, no?
Yeah, but then the tricky thing is, right, that so many teams in this competition aren't set up for VAR. They just don't have the capability, right? But then you get to the semi-finals and it's, or, you know, the semi-finals and it has VAR because Wembley does have it, or the big teams are playing the quarterfinals. I wouldn't mind if it didn't have it. I just don't think it matters. I don't think, because it's different.
It does matter. It does matter. I don't think it's managers whinging either. I think it's managers who have probably made that point of view before even kicking a ball. But obviously no one talks about it. And then there's a massive decision that doesn't go their way. They've got every right to talk about it. You know, I heard so many commentators on over the weekend when there was coverage saying, you know, it's really good that there's no VAR today. You know, so the controversy of the system means that it's going to have an effect somewhere along the line. And that then makes it an unlevel competition for sure, no?
No.
No, okay. All right. Ben was going to add something.
Yeah, Ben, add some value.
Robin, I need you to back me up here, Robin, somewhere along the line.
No, I'm too nice. I'm too nice. I'm staying out of it.
I mean, nobody likes sort of protecting or defending referees. It's not very in vogue, is it? But I almost feel a bit of sympathy for the referees with this as well, in terms of, you know, one game there, they've got VAR, all the bells and whistles, and next, suddenly you're plunged into it, and suddenly they're probably looking for that, you know, where's that helping hand or that assistance, and it's just not there. And I don't know how fair that is really, and you would need a referee to tell you, but I think it must be so different refereeing a game with VAR in, you know, the Stockley Park kind of assistance and all the rest of it, as opposed to just the old kind of setup of, you know, it's my decision, that's it, and there's no replays, there's no second chances. So I did feel that a bit the other night at Bristol City West Ham. I just wonder, you know, is that fair? I don't know. We're talking about the players and the managers and for the teams, but is it fair on the referees? They get so much stick, but you know, it's difficult enough as it is, and yeah, suddenly they're sort of thrown into this almost like weird world where actually, no, that big thing that we've been talking about and dealing with all season, that doesn't exist this round, but this weekend, oh yeah, it's all back.
Does that mean you're creeping onto my side of thinking then, Ben? Is that
I think I've had a second wind.
There you go. See, I've influenced already, Max. See?
No, it doesn't mean that, because you know, if you can't have VAR in this competition, then you're saying you can't have the refs that ref in the Premier League refing in this competition. So, but anyway, it was all value added, wasn't it? So like, that's great. Look, Luton 1-2-1 at Bolton. Nice to see Tim Krul. And Bolton ran them close, didn't they? Andros has signed an extension with Luton, so he doesn't have to come and stay in your spare room, Troy. So that is that's wonderful news. Birmingham beat Hull 2-1. Tony Mowbray's first win as Birmingham manager, came back from behind. I noticed that Billy Sharp plays for Hull. I didn't know that. And John Ruddy's still playing for Birmingham. And look, Newport's win at Eastleigh was huge because the winners were going to play Manchester United. And so that is big. And Everton won the Andros Townsend Derby, beating Crystal Palace 1-0. Now, the BBC report said Andre Gomez's free kick was a rare moment of quality. And I feel like Everton Palace is the most likely game to have a rare moment of quality, in that both sides have got some good players, but most of the game would probably be shit.
No,
but there could be a rare moment of quality.
That's not true. Do you not remember?
Troy, that was two games, over two legs. Can you really dispute that?
I can't dispute it over those two games, I must admit. But he's trying to indicate that it's all the time, every single time that Everton play Crystal Palace. And it's just not true. Do you not remember the great comeback, 2-0 down at Goodison Park and 3-2 and vibrant game and loads of good stuff going? No, you don't remember that one either. Crystal Palace beating Everton 4-0 in the FA Cup.
No, because like a match that has a rare moment of quality needs to have some quality in it, right? So there are some games that wouldn't even have that. So it's a sort of backhanded compliment to Crystal Palace and to Everton.
Nah, I'm not having that.
Anyway.
Apparently it was a really poor game, apparently. So yeah. And Luton go up to Everton. So it's another Andros Townsend derby.
It is. Will you go to that, or you haven't checked the weather?
No, I've got to check the weather first, but it's likely that I will be there.
Newport, Man United, Tottenham City, Chelsea, Villa, probably the biggest ties of the fourth round, and we'll cover that when it happens, and that'll do for part one. We'll do a Premier League preview in part two. Hi Pod fans, Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May the 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Now, we didn't do any Wolves-Brentford, despite being a good game, because Troy hadn't seen it. But Ben, there was a big moment, a thing that the fans love to see in this game.
Yes, a heartening story, if ever there was one. A Wolves fan, season ticket holder, who's an under-12s referee, suddenly found himself sort of thrust onto fourth official duties. He volunteered, and the assistant referee was injured, so he came down and and did a turn as the fourth official towards the end of the game. And I like the fact he said that he needed a crash course in how to use the substitutes board, which I just thought was quite an interesting image, really, just to see how that plays out. And I felt a bit sorry for him. He said he was getting bombarded by Brentford staff, which, I mean, you would be. But I think Thomas Frank is probably the last person you want to be sort of bombarded with, really. He's pretty lively at the best of times, so I can imagine it got a bit interesting. But apparently he was invited into the referee's room afterwards for the usual kind of post-match pleasantries. So, yeah, what an occasion. The guy, season ticket holder, Ross Bennett, and his son, 11-year-old son, was in the crowd throughout. So I'm sure he had a great time at school the next day.
Ross Bennett is a good referee's name, isn't it?
That is such a referee's name, isn't it? Yeah. Apparently he said they don't ask for any credentials. So, you know, I was just thinking, like, you could really, really take the piss here. Like, with when they teach you how to use the board, you just, like, substitute their goalkeeper. and then also he said he couldn't celebrate the Wolves winner. And I'm like, well, what? Just go for it. Just, you know, chuck the subs board in the air, take your top off, get on the pitch.
I like the idea that he did it in Wolves kit. He just had he had like an old Steve Bull shirt, you know, with Goodyear on the front, and was just like, well, this is just what I went to the game in. But I like the fact, you know, it is like, is there a pilot on board? And then someone just sticks their hand up, you know.
Exactly.
So who knows? But I know it's a good story. Anyway, look, Arsenal play Palace. They were top not too long ago. They're now fourth, 5 points off Liverpool. Can't score goals. It feels crucial, Troy, that they win this game.
I think it's crucial from both sides. Roy Hodgson's coming in for quite a lot of stick lately and would have done, you know, with the club going out of the FA Cup last night. And I think for Mikel Arteta, they need to get back on track really, really quickly. It's quite surprising. For me, it's quite surprising because when they did hit the top, I thought, wow, they're doing it again, you know. They're showing their worth. They're proving that they're a really top side. And I'm not saying that defeats don't mean that you're not a top side. But from hitting the top, they're now 5 points behind Liverpool, and City are gaining traction as well. And, you know, Spurs and Villa are still in and around them. So it's a pressure game. It's a game that they normally win over the last few years, although there has been, Palace have gone there a couple of times and nicked a draw they've drawn and won there. But I think the fans will feel the pressure as well. If Palace start well, and I mean in terms of, you know, not conceding goals in the first 15 or so minutes, apply a little bit of pressure, it could be a really difficult fixture. It's the early one as well, which sometimes throws up some results, doesn't it? So I think Arteta will be feeling the pressure a little bit just because of the other results that are going on around them and the fact that they've been knocked off their perch and, you know, are now in the mix, really. And I don't know what's going wrong. You know, the forward line should have enough about it to put the ball in the back of the net on a consistent basis. They do create a lot of chances, but players lack confidence at times. And I think what's happened here is that at the same time, the forward players that Arsenal have are lacking a little bit of confidence. Saka looks, I mean, for a lad that age, the amount of games that he's played and the times that he's kept on the pitch when maybe he does need a breather, I think they need to find a way to give him a little bit of a rest so that he can it can spark again somewhere along the line. So this is an interesting fixture, although I do believe Arsenal will win it just because of, I don't know, I'm not sure Roy's got long left, let's put it that way.
I mean, I hope all the Palace fans come dressed as Salt Bae. That's what I think. Yeah, that would be good.
Oh, he's going to be asked about that today, isn't he? And I can't bear it. I can't bear. He's going to be asked about it in a press conference today, and I actually don't want. I don't want to hear his answer. I don't want to hear the question. It's going to be so awful.
I mean, it can't be as bad as the original video, but yeah.
Oh, I think his position might be untenable.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
I enjoyed the instant regret.
Yeah,
Anyway, Brentford Forest, the return of Ivan Toney. Brentford are playing it quite low key. They tweeted out a picture saying the return. And look, Ben, they need an immediate impact from him, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I think, you know, they need him and he needs them. I mean, I think it's interesting that the messaging in the last couple of weeks has sort of been a bit mixed from Toney. You know, at first it was very much, you know, I'm very grateful to Brentford, obviously throughout the period, support all the rest of it. And then since then, I believe the interview was last week and it sort of aired this week where he's sort of saying, you know, I could move this month. You know, I want to play for a top club. I just thought, I felt a little bit uncomfortable with that. Maybe he's just stating the truth in reality, but I feel like he does owe it to Brentford to stick out this season, kind of regardless. And I know, you know, Brentford are in a bit of an awkward spot, really, where I'm not saying they're going to go down, but they're not as comfortable at this stage as they have been in other years. So that they do very much need somebody to win them games, to score them goals. And obviously he's prime candidate for that. I think it will be really interesting to see what Ivan Toney we see. Obviously he's adamant he's going to be sort of bigger and better than ever. And that may well be the case. He's obviously done loads of work. He's been scoring endless hat tricks for the under 23s, under 21s. But that's obviously a different game. So yeah, it'd be interesting what Ivan Toney we see, and then obviously the implications for can he, if he plays well, scores goals, can he then maybe get back in the England fold?
Does he start, Ben?
I think so, yeah.
You think they'll throw, yeah, Robin, you're saying, so. Yeah, they'll throw him in straight away.
I think the position that they're in, they're 3 points off the relegation zone, and as Ben was saying, like he's not been injured. He's fit, maybe not like Premier League match fit, but he's also, you'll know Troy, he's immensely confident, isn't he? He's, you know, no doubting in his own ability. Yeah. So I think they'll put him in straight away.
Yeah. And actually, if they get a penalty, you want him on the pitch, right? Like, even if you can't move. As we established, I think a few pods ago, perhaps he's just eaten for this whole time and he'll be enormous. That's what we're really hoping for. Sergio Reguilón's joined Brentford from Spurs on loan, which seems quite sensible given Rico Henry's been out and Rico Henry's been a big loss for them. While we're on Forest, they've signed 42 players since promotion. And, you know, along with Everton, the Premier League said that both of those sides have each confirmed that they're in breach of the league's profitability and sustainability rules. That's the Premier League's version of FFP. It added, this is as a result of sustaining losses above the permitted thresholds for the assessment period ending season 22-23, which I think is £105 million. The clubs now have 14 days to submit their formal responses. The hearings must be concluded within 12 weeks. Appeal hearings must be held before the 24th of May, and it must all be resolved before the 1st of June. And now that is interesting because that is after the Premier League has finished. So you could envisage a position where Forest and Everton have had deductions that may have sent them down, and then they resolve it on the 1st of June, and then they stay up again. I mean, it is an absolute... It's a total minefield. You watched the whole DCMS thing with Richard Masters, Ben, didn't you? Was it nice and was it fun?
Yes, I treated myself to that on first thing on Tuesday morning. Richard Masters and Rick Perry, the EFL chair, were there. I did find it kind of mildly amusing. They kind of sat there like naughty school children, you know, kind of within inches of each other, but clearly kind of sort of semi-despising each other at the same time. I think it took about an hour and a half for them until they both admitted, like, okay, we do agree on this point. You know, there's so much differences of opinion between the two, between the Premier League and the EFL. I think in terms of the charges, obviously it was put to Richard Masters on Tuesday at the DCMS, you know, okay, fine, with Everton and Forest, but what about Man City? What's going on? You know, why are they different? Again, Richard Masters said, you know, you're not comparing like with like. It's a different set of charges, a different type of charges. Obviously, we know there's 115 of them. He says there's a date for that, but you know, can't share what that is. But obviously, Forest and Everton feel particularly hard done by. In Forest's case, I'm not sure they can really have too many complaints. I mean, I get that a lot of it hinges on the sale of Brennan Johnson, which they're saying that because it got later in the window, they were able to recoup a bigger fee, just shy of 50 million. If they sold him earlier in the window, it would have been for less. And they're saying the Premier League were aware of this. And, you know, this was almost good business by then. This was them trying to act in the interest of the P&S rules. But I don't think it is. They knew the cutoff. All the clubs knew the cutoff points. And, you know, September is not, I think it was the end of June. You know, in September is not the end of June. So in black and white, that's quite obvious. And I also feel like I spent a lot of time at Leicester last season. You know, they were relegated in effect. I mean, you can't say this for sure, but obviously they spent zero money, basically, barely signed anybody. A lot was made of that. Obviously, Rodgers was frustrated. But they were in effect relegated because they were so scared of breaching those rules. They were so scared to bring bodies in. Now, if they're playing by the rules, you know, everybody else should as well. Wolves, as we know, sold a load of players to, you know, adhere to the rules and not fall foul. Even Villa, to their credit, you know, sold a lot of academy products this season because, again, for the same reason, Brennan Johnson, with being homegrown, you know, when that comes to FFP or PNS, that's sort of gold dust, really. So they sold, obviously, Archer, Ramsey and others, homegrown players, to get on and sort of balance those numbers. So I don't have loads of sympathy for Forest. The Everton situation, I don't know quite so much about, to be brutally honest, but just as a rule, I think, you know, all of the clubs knew the cut-off points. They knew the dates. That's kind of how it is.
It'll be interesting. But yeah, that cut-off date, the 1st of June, is just crazy because it just means that everyone's waiting now. And it's not just those clubs impacted. If they don't get themselves out of trouble, it'll be the clubs underneath them as well.
Bournemouth, Liverpool, no Salah, no Endo, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Szoboszlai, Robertson all out injured. Do you see them still marching on though, Robin? I mean, marching is probably too strong a word for what they're doing, but they are doing incredibly well. They've only lost one game in the league this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they will be favourites, but, you know, this is a very different Bournemouth side as we've seen. They've just lost one in their last nine. Bournemouth, that was the defeat to Spurs. So this is going to be a tough one for Liverpool, but even so, as you say, you can't really see them losing it. They might give up a few chances. You know, they don't look structurally quite as secure as they sometimes do, but they seem to always find a way. So, I'd be quite surprised if they don't win. But having said that, I've seen quite a lot of Bournemouth this season. They're really, really good. It should be a really good game, this one, actually.
And actually, that game they lost at Spurs, they could really easily have won it, couldn't they?
A bit wasteful, weren't they, that day?
Yeah. Sheffield United, West Ham, the other game. There's Brighton Wolves on Monday and Sheffield United, West Ham at the weekend. West Ham linked to Calvin Phillips, like everyone else. Newcastle are, Palace are. I think everyone's waiting for the loan fee to go down. And I guess in terms of minutes on the pitch, it's Calvin Phillips versus Jordan Henderson. Or do you just think they'll both go anyway, Ben, to the Euros?
Yeah, my gut feeling is I think they would both go anyway. I think Southgate already... I do have a bit of sympathy for him, really, because I think there's actually... I think it's sort of admirable in a way that he has these guys who he relies on. They have been pretty, impressive and sort of consistent for their country. You know, Harry Maguire, obviously a lot of people say, oh, you know, he's not playing, should he be in? But invariably, you know, all of these guys really have performed for England. Obviously, Phillips and Henderson kind of probably fall into that bracket. Neither have really done themselves any favours. Obviously, the way this season's panned out, not all of their own faults. Obviously, Phillips, you know, Will Philly, he probably deserves to be playing a bit more. I do really like him. I think it's a shame what's happened since he's gone to City, because, you know, why wouldn't you join Man City, really? It was a step up. It was a good move. Especially, you know, his sort of backstory. What an incredible journey for him. But yeah, he needs to play. But I think both would go anyway.
Yeah. On Jordan Henderson, we talked about it a bit yesterday. Lots have been written about it and sort of what a terrible move it's been for him and his reputation. Michael says, now that Jordan Henderson's moving to Ajax, how long until he's on Erik ten Hag's radar? It's a good question, Ben. What impact will Jordan Henderson have transforming the game over in the Netherlands? Anyway, be interesting to see how he gets on at Ajax. And that'll do for part two. And part three, we'll begin talking about the problems at Reading. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's talk about Reading then and their ownership under Dai Yong. An email, we've had loads of emails about it. David says, any chance of a proper in-depth analysis of what's happening to Reading FC? I appreciate that in the football world, we're regarded with general disinterest, but there is an interesting point for the panel to consider about foreign ownership. The fans feel largely that there's nothing they can do, and the pitch invasion today was a reflection. The owners based in China appears to have no interest in the club. Staff have not been paid. The EFL seems unwilling to solve the problem beyond more fines and points deductions, which just makes the situation worse. At the very least, please don't make it a throwaway one-liner. Regards, David. Let's talk to Neil Rees from the fan action group Sell Before We Die. Neil, thanks so much for your time.
No, thank you very much.
I don't know if you were... Were you on the pitch against Port Vale, Neil?
I wasn't. Our group was supposed to go on at the end of the game.
Right.
But as with most fan emotion, you can't control what happens in real time. So The fans that went on the pitch did that of their own free will, and here we are talking about the results of that.
Yeah, so in many ways, because I said on the radio the next day, oh, look, we can't condone that. And Barry actually picked me up and said, well, why not? Like, what else can you do? Like, do you feel, you know, since then the EFL have released a statement imploring Dai Young to fund the club adequately or make immediate arrangements to sell. The chief executive, Dai Young Pang of Reading, said, we're still talking to people. I ask for our fans to be patient. And he said, Mr. Dai is 100% willing to sell the club. So do you feel like that was it was good that you guys did it?
Yes, ultimately, the reward is the exposure that we've now got. Beforehand, you know, we've tried tennis balls, we've tried marching from the town to the stadium. We've tried numerous things to get noticed, for the owner to notice what we're trying to achieve. And it's worked to a point, but we didn't want a pitch invasion. No one really knew what the outcome would be of a pitch invasion. But it's come to this, where the story has now gone worldwide, and it's now getting some traction where the owner has noticed. We had a statement yesterday from the club saying that they're looking to dispose of the club at the earliest notice, which is something, but it's just empty words until something happens. And he's had so many chances to act and hasn't done so on every level, whether it's financial or selling the club.
Give us an idea of, you know, what has happened to the club since he took over.
Oh, wow. So he's had the club since after our playoff final defeat against Huddersfield in 2017. Since then, he has racked up numerous offences, basic ones you could say, of like over inflating contracts for players, not selling players when they were at peak value, contracts that were Premier League level for some players that barely deserved it, stripping the captaincy from the club captain. Then you start to get into profit and sustainability. Points deductions. We've had more points taken off us through Dai Young than any other club has in that time period. Redundancies. No catering now. So there's so much. There's so much wrong. You couldn't make it up. You couldn't run a football simulator and come up with the amount of stuff that he's managed to foul up.
I suspect as fans, you're just sitting there going, why buy the thing? Like, what's the motivation? What, you know, people who understand what it's like to support a club of Reading size, so it's modest, but it's not a tiny club. You know, why would you possibly get involved with it? Do you think he thought he could make loads of money?
I think so. He shot for the Premier League and didn't get there, but he never had a business plan. He may be a businessman, but he doesn't know how football works. He surrounded himself with agents like Keir Jarabchan to get in players, but with no defined plan at all. It was just scattergun. So when he just kept throwing money at it, it was just like a kid at Christmas. You know, he just kept going and going and going, but didn't think about any consequence.
Neil, this is what I don't understand. And there is a fit and proper test, isn't there? Whatever that means. So who do you blame for this? Do you blame the league for allowing it to happen, or do you just blame the owner for, like you just said, he didn't even have a proper business plan? So how can he take over a football club without a proper business plan, and how can that be passed by the football league?
This is one of the big mysteries. It's, you know, the EFL acted like an owner of a house. He gave the keys to the tenant, and he just trashed the place. And now the EFL can't do anything. They can't take the club back. They can, you know, give him permission, but they can't revoke it. So we're kind of stuck with, you know, how did he get in the first place? He's had dealings with other clubs that don't even exist now. The warning signs were all there, but they were just never really heeded enough. And I think he just showed that he had enough capital at the time to invest, but that was before China shut down and started to, you know, totally divest their interest in football across the world. So yeah, we're kind of, you know, gone through a trapdoor now, and there's no way back up, and not in a, in an easy, tangible sense that we can and we recognise.
How grave is the situation? Like, how worried are you about Reading going ceasing to exist?
Easily, easily. He already is at the point where we don't know whether he's going to pay the staff and players month on month. He's already, you know, he's canny to a point where he knows he can pay the players. We won't get a deduction in points because he's paying the players, but he'll forego paying HMRC. And he'll string that out for as long as possible. We've had, you know, numerous attempts to wind us up, and then he pays the money. And, you know, it's just a situation where he knows that he can do so much but chooses not to anymore. His interest is that little. And so we want him to sell the club when he's barely got an interest in running it as a going concern. So we've got no faith in him to do what he should be doing. So, yeah, the end of the season could be the last at the moment.
In that statement that you mentioned, Reading said, Mr. Dyer has agreed that he will look to sell the club at the earliest opportunity. He's engaged lawyers to assist in the disposal. As you say, it's the wrong choice of words, isn't it? The EFL are fully engaged in the process, and they are being kept informed on a regular basis, committed to supporting the club in finding the appropriate solutions as quickly as possible. We ask in conclusion for our fans to keep faith in the club and to know that the owners are making every effort to finalise its sale at the earliest opportunity. In return, the owners commit to communicating substantive developments when they are able to do so. Robin?
I just wanted to ask, Neil, can you remember the sort of feeling around the club, the fans, when he took over all those years ago? Like, was it sort of a feeling of hope? And also, just generally, what do you think can be done to sort of prevent this situation happening time and time again for clubs? Because I actually don't know what could be done when, especially when sort of certain clubs are in real dire situations and fans are just desperate for anyone to come in, even if it's, you know, someone a bit nefarious or has a bit of a past, because it will save their club. It's such a tricky thing to sort of unpick.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. It's, I think at the start, much like, you know, any team that sees players coming through the door, you get excited about that. You don't think anything to the opposite, where you kind of think, hang on, we've got to pay for this at some point, or we're going to have to balance this with sales. You don't think that way. You just think good signings equals better team equals better future. But we soon found out that it was just unfounded. It just didn't work. He, as I said before, he didn't sell players when they had value. We've let players go for free that, you know, are very decent championship players now, or even higher. It is a cautionary tale that if you do get a bad owner, you can't convince them otherwise, because we're just fans. We haven't got a voice. We haven't got a voice at that level to say, hang on, do you really realise what you're doing here, what this means to people, what the heritage is of this club? And he doesn't, he can't. And, you know, we do expect these things of owners, but in reality, it doesn't exist. They are business people. We value our clubs with our hearts, you know, outside of our pets and our family. This is us. This is what we fight for. And this is why our pressure group exists.
I was just going to say, I do have a sort of tinge of sympathy for the EFL in the sense, Neil, that obviously when he came in, as you say, he spent, I think, upwards of 250, maybe 300 million. Obviously, the training grounds should be a really incredible facility. Obviously, as you say, just shot for the moon. You know, spent far too much on players, whether they're the right players, big wages, all the rest of it. And as you say now, he's just totally checked out. And obviously to the detriment of the club and the community. But it's a hard one, isn't it? Because I think when I've spoken to the EFL before, they've sort of said, you know, good owners can become bad. And that seemingly, at one point, it wasn't quite so bad when he was sort of ploughing money in, as you say, sort of trying to achieve the dream, the big dream, the big sort of, you know, Premier League carrot. And then as soon as that obviously didn't become a possibility, and he's like, hang on a minute, I've spent all of this money and it's not come off, and it's just gone south so quickly. It's a hard one, isn't it? Because as you say, I know he has the history of dissolving the two clubs, one in Belgium, one in China, but And obviously that they tried to buy Hull, although I think there's a suggestion that the consortium, a couple of the members of that, were part of the reason that that fell down through the Premier League's fit and proper test. But even still, so you can, I get it. You can obviously make the argument that, you know, why was this guy anywhere near a football club? Totally see that. And I think it's a really valid question. But he has also spent loads of money, albeit very badly. And what, you know, what do you do when somebody just loses interest totally? I mean, Wayne's is probably underselling it, isn't it? Because it's the guy is checked out, as you say. He's having to be sort of coerced into paying regular bills.
And I guess, Neil, it's an argument for the regulator, isn't it? That now no one has any power to make him sell. Like, that's up to him, right? You can pressure him, you can invade the pitch, but actually, like, can the EFL force him? Can anyone force him to sell?
No. The short answer, the EFL, the only thing the EFL could do, and it's a stretch, is to disqualify him as a director. The caveat to that is, once he is disqualified, if it comes to it, he's got then 28 days as a minimum to divest his interest in the club. He's had 4 or 5 months to do that already, and he's still not managed it. So 28 days is not really realistic to say, hey, are you going to do this or not? He's not really going to start to jump into gear if he's disqualified as an owner. He's more likely to rail against that, and at which point we would be disallowed to be in the competition. Ergo, no more club.
Oh, man, I just feel for you so much, because it's just you're so beholden to, you know, your club can have a good owner or a bad owner. There's absolutely nothing you can do. I mean, what can other fans do? Like, you know, I presume most people listening to this podcast support a football team. Like, they love football. Is there anything they can do to help?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fairness, since the pitch invasion, the Port Vale fans were absolutely excellent. They've been through, you know, similar troubles. They were fantastic with us, as has many other clubs that have, you know, got in touch with us recently. They all see how easy this could be for it to be their club. As you say, you know, a dodgy owner can be sought through no fault of anyone. They can get into a position if they show the right credentials, but they can turn bad. Our website, sellbeforewedie.co.uk, has a crowdfunder, and that'll enable our next steps to go through with the plans that we've got ahead to, you know, if it comes to it, we have to embarrass Die further. And there's plans that we've got that we need funding for to go forward to ensure that we're giving us the best chance of survival. Because if we don't, then the club will go. It is as simple as that. It could be a matter of months before it happens, and that's just unbearable thinking, really.
You have our sympathies. Like, we all, you know, we've all support teams. I know, like, three of us are lower league fans, you know.
Yeah,
Troy exactly. Just supports whoever, you know, whoever Andros is cutting inside for. But, you know, most of us, like, we know, like, Cambridge have been badly run in the past, and I'm really lucky that they're really well run now, but you never know how long it's going to last for. We'll definitely, like, tweet out that information, or certainly I will. And thanks for coming on. Let's keep in touch.
Cheers. Thanks very much, guys.
Neil Rees from Sell Before We Die. And that'll do for today. Thank you, Ben.
Cheers, Max.
Thanks, Robin.
Thanks, Max.
Cheers, Troy.
Always a pleasure, Max.
Football Weekly is produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Christian Bennett.
This is The Guardian.